Today's Mishnah in Masechet Shviyos is Perek Tet, Mishnah Gimel. So we had just learned about the Shalosh Haratzot. We had the big machlokas about precisely what the three places are that have Shalosh Haratzot, whether we're talking about, as the Rambam was learning, that the three places were the Galil, Yehuda, plus the line of the Eiver HaYarden, Ma'arova, or whether we were actually talking about, the way the Gra understands it, we were talking about the Galil, Yehuda, and we were talking about essentially Binyamin, and saying that that area is, which is why we're talking about Lud, and the area from the Lud to the Shvela, and so on, which was a completely different understanding of the Mishnah, or whether we're not even mentioning what the area of the third country is, and that would have been that it would be Eiver HaYarden, literally. So those were three main approaches. But what was never clear is, what is the point of saying three Aratzot, and each one of those Aratzot has a different Eretz in it, and that they all have Shalosh, Shalosh Aratzot. Now this, it turns out, is a big machlokas in how to understand this Mishnah, which is now coming to address what did we mean when we said Shalosh Aratzot. So we'll go through both pshat. Lama Amru Shalosh Aratzot. So what was the point of saying that each one of them has Shalosh Shalosh Aratzot? That would be that it's coming to tell me that Sheyu Ochlim B'chol Achat V'Achat Ad She'ichle Acharon Sheba. So now, one approach to the Mishnah has it that you can only eat in the particular topographical area of each one of those aratzot in terms of its local topography, because we have to take into consideration the overall climate issue, and we have to take into consideration territorial issues of animals. And therefore, since the Torah talked to us about the relationship between Chayat HaSadeh and Behemticha, and we had understood that called Zman, that it's Motzi L'Chayat HaSadeh, only then are you allowed to keep it to Behemticha Asher Babayit, and if not, then you have to get it out of your house, which is the sense of Biur. So the Mishnah with Gufa coming to tell us, don't think that this is about the territory, that an animal's territory is defined by the barriers between Yehuda and the Galil or something like that. No, that's not the point. It has to be two issues that you need to take into consideration. And that is that the territory is going to be nogea, its specific way of eating this type of food. So Mimela, even if it has a habit of eating in the har, and you'll say, well, won't it go down to the Amek if it can find this same food in the Amek? No, because the climate in the Amek has restricted its general wandering, and it's only going to go to the Har. So that would mean that when we say Shalosh Aratzot Kol Echad, according to this approach, we actually have nine separate areas. And we have to recognize that it isn't just about what it looks like to us, Well, it's the same topography. What's nafkamina if it's in the Har HaMelech and Yehuda, or whether it's in the Harei HaGalil, boils down to the same thing. Or what's the difference if it's in Tveria, or if it's in Emek HaYarden, and it's, even though Tveria is the Emek Shebegalil, wrong, not true, because there are many things that you might not be sensitive to, but when you start understanding the ecology, then you'll understand that you need to take into consideration the specific access to a behemoth in terms of where it will normally range. So that means that we really have nine separate issues. And that's what the Mishnah is talking about. Now, this is the pashtus of the approach of the Yerushalmi. And because of that, the Rash explains the Mishnah based on this as meaning that basically it means you've got nine aratzot is what it really means. However, the Rambam's approach is the exact opposite, and the truth is that Rashi has exactly the same approach as the Rambam, and therefore what we're asking is, what is the point of saying Shalosh Aratzot if there are really Teisha Aratzot. So we're Gufa, the Gemara's, the Mishnah's whole point is to ask the question about why not just say that there's nine separate areas? So why would they have said that there's Shalosh Aratzot Lebiur? Since according to the Rashi's Pshat, that's precisely what you end up saying anyway. So therefore, the point is, Shiu Ochlum B'kolachas V'achas Achi Yechleha Acharon Shabbat. That even though, according to this approach, even though you would think that since the normal place in which such a thing grows is in the har, and if it's still available in the emek, so then maybe the animal wouldn't go down to the emek, not true. The range of the animal will include even going down to the emek or vice versa, which would be more the norm that it will be the weather and the climate in the har allows things to remain around longer. And therefore it's coming to tell me that even if it's within, but it has to be within the range of the overall, not the topology, but the overall area, which includes things like climate and so on. So in water supplies, the way that things taste, the type of soil, all types of issues that you may not be sensitive to, but that animals are sensitive to, and therefore you should train yourself to understand the earth a little bit better. And that's what Shemitah is all about. And it's about Shavtah Ha'aretz, and knowing what the earth needs. And remember, that was the idea of the Chori Yoshvei Ha'aretz, as the Gemara puts it, V'chikol Olam Kula Yoshvei Shamayim, I understand. Of course the Yoshvei Ha'aretz. No, it means that they really live on this planet, and that they were able to taste the soil and know its nutrients and differentiate it from any other soil. Now, that's the way you're supposed to live on this planet. And therefore, that's what Shemitah is machayev you, sensitivity instead of mechanics and trailers and tractors. Okay, so according to this, the whole point would be that an animal will range far afield from where something normally grows, because it knows where it can still get that particular prey. Okay, so it would only be where it's completely gone. So in other words, you can't get it in the, you can't get it around Gavi's house, you can't go down to Tveria and get it, you won't be able to get it anywhere in the Galil. That would be the point, or in Yehuda and so on. Okay, so this is the Rambam's approach and Rashi's approach. Rabbi Shimon Omer, this whole idea you have wrong. Lo amru shalosh aratzot ela biyehuda. This whole idea of having this wide range of the Shvela and the Har and the Emek, that was only said legabe Yehuda itself. And that would be, so again, depending on what approach you took, that since it's so well separated, that therefore boils down to three separate aratzot, according to the first approach. Masha'enkin shar kol aratzot. If you're talking about what we said before, whatever they are, whether it's Galil, referring to Binyamin, referring to Ever Hayarden Mizracha, referring to Ever Hayarden Ma'arova, over there, everything is the same as the Har HaMelech in Yehuda. And that is because there was such a range of peros that grow in the Har HaMelech, and there would be always access to peros there at the latest point, that the animal will know that if things are running out, just like elephants will travel for a very long way to get water, so too will other animals extend their range, even though it's not normally where they would go. And they know that they're able to still find food in Yehuda. And therefore, the only place where it would really be Nogea would be the Har HaMelech, according to what Rabbi Shimon is saying. Furthermore, says Rabbi Shimon, this is machlokas, but I'm taking one approach. Some say that this next statement that I'm about to make is not Rabbi Shimon, that everybody is made to this, even though it seems to be predicated on the same concept. So the easiest way to understand it and to see its implications would be to take it as an extension of Rabbi Shimon. So furthermore, says Rabbi Shimon, there are certain species that have a place where they grow, and every animal knows that place. And therefore, again, if an elephant is going to be going for some type of, let's say, it's having hormonal problems for reproduction, it knows that there are certain trees that stimulate estrogen. That's how we actually learn a lot of meaning from animals that have found places to go where they can cure themselves from various issues, even to the level of sophistication of being able to get hormonal stimulants, which is absolutely astounding. Of course, there's lower level issues like this, places where they know they can get drunk because the fruits become very alcoholic when they're sitting around on the tree. Yeah, there's places like that too. All right, what do you want? One is Dr. Elephant and one is Drunken Elephant. But the bottom line is that those type of things that have a standard area in which they always grow. So you're talking about, let's say, dates. We know that we can draw a line of where dates are going to be Motzo in Eretz Yisrael, all through the Jordan Valley, along the valley, up into Tveria. And, well, we understand that. Of course, an animal knows that too. So if you're into dates, that's where you're going to go. And therefore, it's not part of the normal range of the animal. It's what is specifically gone to for purposes of getting a particular thing. And that's a whole different understanding of the ecology, because it isn't part of normal migration or of the range. And it's actually a misera that the animal has of where to go to get something. That's why many of these things are learned behaviors and are extremely dependent on having members of the previous generation around to train the next generation. This is connected to first Asara Dairas, in which we talk about, you know, the time of life after the birth of the son and so on, Acharei Holido, and we talk about that as being one period. Okay, anyway, so, this is very, very amazing. So we have exactly this type of issue. So that would mean if you're talking about, say, olives, and we know where olives grow also, and we know where dates grow. So if you're talking about those kind of things, kol ha'aretzot ke'achad, four things that have a very clear-cut area in which you're going to find them en masse, which is, yes, of course, you'll find a date palm here and there, and you'll find olives here and there, maybe anywhere if you go out of your way to grow them. But like this, animals will know. And therefore, the entire Eretz Yisrael is essentially one when it comes to zeitim and tamarim. As long as they are still growing where they usually grow, the animals are going to get them, even though in your area they're not available. And there's also other things, obviously. I mean, this is not the only thing. I mean, we find the Mefarshim bringing from the Yerushalmi, which the Yerushalmi adds, this is true for Charuv as well. Charuvim are the same all around Eretz Yisrael. But in any event, this is the question of whether we're talking Dafka Libet Rabbi Shimon. So the pashtus from the Yerushalmi, that this is, we extend this to other meaning, is that we're going Lahalocha over here. And that therefore, we have particular centers. So that, I mean, what we continue to bring in the Yerushalmi is Alibet Kulei Alma. Certainly the pashtus, because it gives places that are the last places. And we find this in the Bavli also. Remember, we have the idea of your Eichlin, for some reason, until the last dates grow in Soar. Okay, in the Yerushalmi, it's in Yericho. But whatever the differences were, that I can't, you know, explain that agriculturally. Or Zesim would be around Meron, or around Gush Chalav, or maybe Gavi's front yard, according to some Girsaot. So that would be the last of the Zeitim, or there's also because of that time that is given. So these are the times that we have like in the chart. So Anavim is Ada Pesach, Zeizim is Ada Atzeres, Grogrot, we just completed, is Ada Hanukkah, and then after that, the Grogrot are already Osir, Tmorim or Ada Purim. Okay, so this becomes like a way in which we can define things based on the entire area, then it makes sense that we should be able to define places, times, and so on. And therefore, according to this, it's not Rabbi Shimon. This is an insight at the end of the Mishnah, which is being stated by everyone. Now, I noticed that we were here with a very fluid identity. I remember sometimes he calls himself Barnea of Haran, Sometimes he calls himself Bani of Yericho. But people with fluid identities may have insights into the agricultural references over here, and perhaps he would enlighten us, at least the Barnea of Tsoar. Perhaps he could enlighten us about the difference of Tsoar and Yericho and so on, although Tsoar has a bad reputation.
Well, first things first, the first thing we did in the tour guide course is we learned geology, and the geologist, Doron, taught us to taste the earth and to tell, to see whether it was a base or acid, and therefore what things would grow in it.
Yes, but base and acid is rather base, wouldn't you say?
I understand, but you see this idea of tasting the earth and knowing, so they had a more sophisticated and fine taste, but that's what we did in our training. Although it has a bad reputation, one of the most fascinating finds of Tsoar from the time of the Mishnah and Gemara is tombstones, which are dated by the years of creation, the years of Shemitah, and the years of the Churba.
Wow.
It's astounding, right?
Yeah.
Shlomo Mustafa Bashal had 15 or 16 of them. There's one or two in the Israel Museum.
Fantastic.
And others. And Tsoar in the Mishnah in Chazal is called Yir HaTamarim, not in the Pasuk. But Yericho is called, obviously, Yir HaTamarim in the Pasuk. And Tsoar is at the southeast end of Yam HaMelech. They know in Deuteronomy 34, 1 through 3, is doing a panorama from Har Nevo. It goes to Adson. Obviously, there's a Muslim in Tsoar also, but it means you first look to the right, to the Dan, to the right, and across the north, and down to the south. And my time is up. The people are waiting for me. I hope that's helpful. That range has these special things, which are very precious.
Definitely helpful. We didn't hear the pasuk you were quoting because you faded out there. Just a few.
Ad Tsoar.
Yes, but the whole pasuk you didn't say. Vayareu, you didn't say the whole pasuk.
He looks first to the Dan.
Who's he? I don't know. You're saying he. Well, then say the pasuk.
Is doing a panorama Ad Dan, and then the north, and then across to Judah, and down left at Tsoar. In other words, it's describing a panorama.
Okay, go. Hatzlocha Rabba. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your help. Okay, everybody. I just have a cute story about Tsoar. It's this really insane story. Where I was driving once from Cleveland to some other place in the U.S. There used to be this place called the USA. It's really a lovely place. And, it was really nice once upon a time. Anyway, we get to a little town and the name of the town is Tsoar. What in the world? Tsoar? Well, this little town in Ohio, Tsoar, Ohio. Do they have any idea what Tsoar is? All right. Anyway, I'm driving down the main street of Tsoar, which is all of one block, and there's a big hotel, Lotz Inn. I decided this ain't a place where I would want my kids to be living anyway. So we drive to this Tsoar, and we're laughing, Lotz Inn in Tsoar. A week later, it's absolutely astounding. My son, who was with us, was back in school in Debrecen, Hungary, right? So he says, you won't believe what just happened. So he meets a guy. There's very few Americans there in Debrecen in school, in the university there. He meets an American there. Okay, so they're talking. So he asks the guy, where do you come from? So the guy says, nowhere that you ever heard of. Well, tell me, a place called Tsoar, Ohio. I was just there this week. That is a story that even Barnea would have a hard time. Anyway, beautiful. It's fine. Wonderful seeing you guys. Kol Tov. Have a lovely day. We'll meet Bezrat Hashem tomorrow if the Lord spares us.